This is Will Friedle from Pod Meets World. Let's be honest. The 90s gave us some great things. The music? Totally rad. The fashion? So fly. Home decor? That's a different story. In HGTV's new competitive series, Totally 90s House, two teams of iconic TV stars take on two homes frozen in time. Paired with HGTV experts, they'll turn dated spaces into fresh modern homes and compete for the ultimate bragging rights. Goodbye, honey oak cabinets. Hello, 21st century. Totally 90s House. Special series premiere starts August 26th at 9, 8 central on HGTV.
This Monday.com ad was created by a team of people and AI agents. The agents wrote the copy and managed the timelines, while our human creative director made sure it all made sense. Easy. Create your own AI agent today on Monday.com.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Soundtracking with me, Edith Bowman. If this sounds a little bit like I'm kind of whispering and it might sound a little bit different, that's because I'm in the corner of a gate at Mexico City Airport on my way back from my holibots. But even that is not going to stop me bringing you a brand new episode of my Pride and Joy. And I'm really excited about this episode because it was just a great conversation that I was so happy to have the opportunity to have. Our latest guest then on the podcast is the incredibly talented actor that is Noah Jupe, and he joins me to discuss his latest starring role in the British drama And Sons. The film also stars Bill Nighy, Melda Staunton, George Mackay, Johnny Flynn and Dominic West. So And Sons tells the story of a reclusive novelist who calls his sons to meet, convinced that he is about to pass. Now, I don't want to say too much about this film because I kind of went in thinking it was going to be one thing, and then there's a reveal that kind of takes it in a completely different direction. It's a wonderful ensemble. The film feels quite theatrical in terms of it's set only across a couple of different locations, so it's got this really kind of almost like you're watching a play moment, which I think also is down to the fact that it allows the performances to really play out. Great relationships on screen, great kind of scene partners with some of these brilliant actors, and it's just really worth watching. Really is. It's great. Great film, great story, a unique story, and well worth watching. Loads of music in the film as well. Lots of needle drops, diegetic music, particularly heard from Bill's character playing music in his kind of office space that he is kind of a recluse in his house. Now, as occasionally happens on Soundtracking, this episode, the conversation anyway, is less about music, but Noah is fascinating, both on his craft and talking about lots of other projects that he's been involved in and things that he's got coming up, including the new A Quiet Place film and The Death of Robin Hood. And when it comes to And Sons, Christabel Tapia De Vere's score has yet to be made available either commercially or indeed privately to us. So what better excuse, given he's a composer that we have been chasing forever, to play his magnificent theme music to The White Lotus, especially as you'll discover, he's collaborating on a new project with Noah. A really amazing film. I was about to say little film, but there's nothing little about it. Such an original idea and story, really.
Yeah. felt quite theatrical in terms of like a play almost in a way. It's a really beautiful experience of how immersive it kind of allowed us as an audience to feel. What was your, I guess, was it a script that landed with you for this character? What was your kind of journey with it and with this character?
It's kind of a funny story. I was the first one. There was no one attached to it originally. And I just got sent the script. I heard Pablo Trapero's name and I knew of him and his work because I'd seen, like, I think Crane City, and I loved that film. Anyway, I heard his name and I read the script, and the script is one of those things. It was Sarah Polley's script, and it's still to this day one of the best scripts I've read, just in terms of like the dialogue, the characters, the way it all fitted together. I was like, wow, this is top level, like, British drama, also comedy, like really, really intriguing characters. And so I was in LA and I heard that Pablo was in London. So I just got on a plane and I flew to London like that day. And I flew in, and because he was in London for like 2 days and then he was going back to Argentina.
Oh, wow.
And he was like, so I flew to London and basically just got this meeting with him, and I was like, I just really want to do your film. I love your script. Like, please let me do your film. And we spent the whole night together. We like got drunk and like chatted for ages. And then he was like, a few weeks later, he was like, yeah, I think you're perfect for it, and I'd love you to be part of it. And so then, yeah, I was the first one on board, which is kind of mental, yeah.
That's so interesting, because there's got to be, and there really is, this amazing kind of connective tissue. Not always, but those kind of little sparks of connective tissue with your character and with Bill's character, obviously. Yeah. So these little moments, I don't want to give anything away for people with a film sort of thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're all sons of this man, but there's something specific about this relationship. And it's so interesting from those little, until you find out within the film, the kind of reveal, you kind of go, oh, yeah, he's got things to do, you know, that are similar to his dad sort of thing. Working on something like that, is that something that you, I don't know, that you worked on with Padlam with Bill and talked about, or was it just an instinctive thing?
When I found out that Bill was doing it, I was obviously extremely excited and also kind of nervous, because I think that me and Bill are extremely different people. I mean, for one, like, he's what, 6'2", 6'3", and I'm like 5'8". And so for me to be his son, you know, is sort of maybe a little bit unbelievable. So I really wanted to, capture his energy, but I didn't want it to make it feel like over the top. I think a lot of times in films, people can do this thing where they're doing an impression rather than
mimicking
a performance. I started by just watching as many things as I could find on him, and specifically him younger, and tried to sort of get into his rhythm and his like tone of voice. And I kind of went a bit extreme, and then I like dialed it back.
Pulled it back.
And then I think I'd like been working on that for like a month or 2 months. And then I went in and just did a scene for Pablo, and he was like, yeah, this is cool. This is, and it was
awesome.
Always like, it was always like either tone it up a bit or tone it down a bit. And it was just tweaking the levels. Yeah, but it was fun. It was really interesting. It felt mad, like, doing it to Bill a little bit.
Yeah.
Playing him to himself. But he never, like, brought it up. He never mentioned it. Like, and he was always super lovely. So I was like, great. I felt very sort of safe to do it.
I mean, I feel like we've seen him, obviously, in so many brilliant roles over his career. But I feel like this is something that no one's really given him the opportunity to do. I feel like this is another performance from Bill Nighy that it's kind of like, wow. It's like,
yeah.
Which is beautiful and such a gift for us sort of thing as well. But it's so subtle, but it's so brilliant and so effective in those moments where you kind of see that synergy of those two characters as well.
Yeah.
There's some lovely scenes with you and Imelda as well. That first meeting at the door is like, it's really emotional to watch. I've had the pleasure of chatting to her quite a few times, and she's, she hates doing interviews, which is always tricky, but she's very gracious and kind and generous. And, I love her kind of cheekiness. She's got a real kind of beautiful kind of cheeky energy about her. I mean, a lovely opportunity to work with someone like that as well.
Oh, it was great. And I low-key got to flirt with her, which was amazing. And
low key flirting. I like
yeah, I'm just low key flirting with that. But no, she is a truly like incredible actress and woman. And again, like another one in this that just adds to like the ensemble of this, which is just really, it's so special. Like we got some of Britain's finest, I think, in this film. And just being on set with these guys, and you know, they were talking about how they know each other from theater days, like they've done plays together. And you can just feel this like history and this commitment to their craft, and just watching them work while you're in the scene. Like I it's hard not to be a spectator while you're in scenes with them, because you're just sort of like, wow, they're amazing. And you're trying to like pick up on stuff.
No, it's been amazing to kind of watch and really enjoy your kind of journey and the different projects that you've been part of. And you mentioned theatre there, and you've just come off, you know, that hugely successful Romeo and Juliet. How was that experience for you? And what do you take away from something like that? You know, you talk about, you know, working with people like Imelda, who've got such a kind of rich few more years experience on top of it from you. But this was such a hugely successful kind of production. And I just wondered what you took away from that.
Yeah, it's funny, like, I didn't ever read anything on it or like see anything on it. So I have no idea like how successful
how it did.
It was. But at the end of the day,
it did really well, let me tell you.
Which is great to hear. But I actually like, I've heard from like family members and stuff that they loved it. And also you walk out every night and the seats are filled. And I think that was what the other actors were telling me. It's like, hey, we're walking out every night and there's like one or two seats missing. And that's pretty much it. Like, that's a sign that people are coming to the theater to see it. And that's a good sign. It was a hell of an experience for me. It was sort of like a baptism of fire into like the theater world, into Shakespeare. Also like romance. I've never done a romantic part with another person where you have to get really intimate with someone like that. And so I guess the first time doing it with Romeo and Juliet was kind of perfect.
Yeah, and not just a small crew is there kind of filming it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The audience every night.
Yeah. I think I genuinely felt like I jumped in the deep end and was like drowning at times, definitely, and just learning how to swim. But I think coming out of it, I feel like I have new muscles that I never would have. Having just done film, I feel like I have had all these experiences. Like my relationship with like fear and anxiety has completely changed, because I was battling that every night going out on stage and learning how to cope with that. So it was a really, really big deal for me, sort of like completing that and having that experience. I think I'm gonna have a break from theatre for a little bit. But
yeah, talk about kind of jumping in the deep end, you know, sort of thing with both feet as well. It's like, but you know, you've got to do it. Sometimes you just have to kind of like, you just kind of, rather than taking baby steps into something, sometimes you just have to kind of jump and throw everything into it.
Yeah, they say that, don't they? You have to throw the toddlers in the pool. Like, that's the best way for them to learn how to swim.
There's a couple of things I wanted to mention, if you don't mind, just because I've never had the chance to kind of talk to you about them. Honey Boy, I just have to mention Honey Boy and how incredible that film was. And I got the chance to speak to Alma about it when the film came out, sort of thing as well. And what a force of nature, and just a hugely inspired and creative individual. You've been working from such a young age in such great films, you know, whether it be like Le Mans or Wonder or this and stuff as well. And amazing roles and amazing opportunities, and absolutely holding your own on screen with new talent as well as established talent, like, you know, Christian Bale and all that kind of stuff. But Honey Boy, it was a really special project for me to watch as a film fan. What do you remember about that? What are your memories of Honey Boy?
Honey Boy, for me, was the first time, and like I had such amazing experiences on film sets, and you know, was already deeply in love with it, but Honey Boy was the first time I realized that like acting had the power to sort of change your life. And I remember I sort of went into that project one way and came out like a new human being. I gave my soul for the first time properly. Like I truly like gave myself over to the art. I think for any artist, for the first time they feel that is like a really big deal, because you go, oh, this is like bigger than myself now. I'm like part of something bigger. I had such an amazing time on that project, an incredibly emotional time, but an amazing time. And I really like think about it very fondly when I think about it. And it's kind of awesome because, I don't know, one day I'll get to show my kids and I'll be like, that film was when I went from like a boy to a teenager, you know?
Oh,
and like there'll yeah. be a film where I go from like a boy to a man, and like these like pillars in your life that you actually have recorded, you're yeah. able to sort of see into the soul of yourself at that time and what you were really thinking and feeling. So yeah, it was really cool.
Oh, it's amazing. It's lovely to have the opportunity to talk to you about it, but also just for people who haven't seen it to go and check it out as well. Do you know what I mean? It'll be,
yeah,
it's really nice to do that. Yeah. It's so interesting saying that about that idea of kind of growing on screen as well, because with something like A Quiet Place, for example, you know, those are films that you kind of return into a character, and we see that yeah. character at different stages in life. That's got to be a different experience again.
Yeah, I just finished the third one a few weeks ago. Yeah.
Oh my God, I'm so excited.
Yeah. It's kind of mad. I think I can probably say this, but I finished my last day of shooting was on the same rock that I shot the first shot of the entire film, the first day of filming. I
Oh,
literally finished
whoa.
In the exact same place. And it's funny because it looks nothing like the same place, because all the trees have grown and
the world,
the water's
yeah.
changed, the world's changed. It's been what, 10 years, but John wanted it to be there and sort of, because of, it's wild. And it's always funny with these things, because for the adults, like, they don't grow that much, so for them they come back
yes.
4 years later and they're like, oh,
it's a bit grayer,
everyone sort of looks the same, like nothing's really changed. And then you've got us as like, me and Millie as like staples for how much time has actually passed, because like I've doubled in height, or like Millie's now looks like a woman. Like it's just
yeah
people go, oh shit, it's been such
yeah
a long time, or so much has happened in that time. But it's very cool. I mean, it's cool to be part of like journeys that last this long and that have sort of
yeah
reached people for this long. And yeah,
it's that beautiful kind of unique mix that they get right with those films, where it's, yeah, it's action and it's tension and it's, but it's the heart, it's the emotion that's at the heart of it with
yeah.
these characters and this family that you really are, you care about them. Such a physical experience with those films. I'm really excited as well about Death of Robin Hood. I've not seen it yet, but I'm
yeah.
super excited to see that. That's not far away from coming
you know
out as
what?
Well.
Like,
you've been busy, mate.
I think Death of Robin Hood is one of my favorite films I've ever made.
How
Really,
come?
Like, really, I think weirdly because it's my exact taste in a film, it like perfectly fits the like very dark, very emotional, very philosophical, beautifully shot, beautifully scored. Like, that's my taste in film, and that's sort of like what I want to watch. And I've never really done a film like it in that like tone. So when I watched it, I was just a bit of a fan and a geek over it. And Michael, I think, is one of my favorite directors working right now. But yeah, I hope people watch it. I hope it gets the love it deserves, because it's really one of my favorite projects that I've been a part of.
Yeah. Oh, amazing. You mentioned kind of beautifully scored. Is that something that you really kind of lean into, that you're a fan of, is
100%.
Not just within the films that you're part of, but as a film fan?
100%. I listen to film scores. I sort
Do
of,
you?
Yeah. So, I mean, on a lot of projects, I'll have like scores in my headphones, because they're so immersive and they're so beautiful. Like some of them are so beautiful. And I also think that nowadays they're becoming really creative and inventive. And, you know, I just worked with this film I'm producing. Christabel is doing our music.
Yeah.
And I think he is
Oh,
like
wow.
he's such a special man, and he's really doing like new things with music that you haven't heard before, and like creating these atmospheres. And you, you know, I've been sitting through the edit, and you watch a scene, and you're like, I mean, it's fine. And then the music comes, and you're like, oh wow! Suddenly, there's like all this other elements to it that you didn't realize were possible.
That's amazing. That's another exciting kind of chapter for you in terms of moving into, you know, filmmaking in a way as well. Has that always been the want?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I have a production company with my parents, and they're like two of the most beautifully creative people I know, and they work so well together. But like when I was younger, they were sort of helping me with my work, and then we were always sort of talking about what we could do together. And my mum's a writer and my dad is a producer, so it was like, and I'm an actor,
beautiful.
So it was the perfect like setup for us. So we made our first project last year. It was called Psyche, you know. And my mum wrote it, I was in it, my dad produced it, we all produced it.
Wicked.
And I think they're at a later stage in their life where, like, you know, they're really ready to devote all their time to filmmaking, and I love to be part of it, but I couldn't do it on my own. Like, I right now my main focus is acting and films and theater, but you know, so I wouldn't have the time to go off and then like be producing stuff or writing stuff. But it is something that down the line I definitely am interested in. I think probably directing more than anything else.
Great.
Yeah, but we'll see. I mean, it's kind of the perfect setup for me, because sort of when I have a project that I want to make, I've got a company, and I can sort of, I've got a sort of an established company, which is amazing.
And an amazing kind of wealth of experience with having worked with so many great storytellers that you've been able to observe over the years as well.
Yeah, you pick up so much, especially when you're a kid. You're such a sponge. Like, I remember just being on set. I'm just watching and asking so many questions and just like taking everything in. My biggest like piece of advice, not piece of advice, but for being an actor, is like the more you can just experience a set and experience how these things are made, like the better you're going to be. I feel like I just became better at my craft through just listening, watching, and like being around other amazing people. And yeah, so I feel like I've got very lucky in my life for having this much experience being on like the place I want to be.
Yeah, totally. It's funny, we watched my 13-year-old, we watched, he's mad into car racing, so I was like lining up all the great films that he should watch, sort of thing, and Le Mans was one of them with Jim Mangold, with you guys and stuff, and it was so great to rewatch that film. It's again, that's another great example of kind of like this sort of, you know, there's all that kind of high kind of like tension with the driving side of it, but the heart of that film is just so great, and that relationship with your character and Katrina Balf as well is just amazing in that film. So good to go back and rewatch that as well.
Yeah, it's funny, I only ever like watch my films once. I don't really go back and watch
back and watch them.
But I remember I watched that at the premiere in London and just being like, this is great. I mean, it's just like, this is what sort of blockbusters should be, you know, like it's every box. It has incredible performances, but also all of the stakes that you need, all of the action that you need. And yet it's still just a wonderful story. Yeah, I felt it was very special to be part of that. And also I'm a big car racing nerd as well. And I remember actually for school, I think I convinced my teacher to let me just do a project on Le Mans. So like instead of doing school, I just basically researched Le Mans. And so I got so into it. And that year specifically, I think it's 66. Yeah, it is. It's 66. And I was researching that year specifically and learning all about the track and the cars and everything. And then it got to the point of the shoot where they were like bringing out the cars. Then like they were the real cars, and I'd get to like sit in them and like,
wow,
watch them race. And I was basically studying something and then seeing it be built in front of me. It was amazing.
Wow, what a great life experience that is. That's amazing. And it's interesting, because thinking about something like the death of Robin Hood and that kind of, and I know that you shot loads around, you know, in the UK and kind of really kind of beautiful parts of the UK. But then something like And Sons, where it is kind of really contained, you know, most of it's in that house sort of thing as well. And those two different examples of locations as an actor and kind of how the real tangible nature of those feed into performance, you know, the house almost feeling like a stage and these kind of vistas feeding into that and stuff. How important is that idea of it for you in terms of the locations of where you shoot and how that can feed into your character and performance?
I think the big difference between like stage and film is, I mean, depends what film you're doing, because there's obviously green screens and everything. But
yeah,
for me, most part in my career, you're there. You're like immersed in the world. You feel sort of grounded. If you're like on grass, you're on grass. You feel the wind. There's things that you can touch and feel. It feels like there's a certain sense of like immersion when you're in film that I guess you need to do for yourself when you're on stage. You have to sort of come up with all of that world. But there is also a weird thing for me when I'm like in a scene with an actor, there's a certain like fear around you where like it doesn't matter where you are or what you're doing.
Yeah.
You're locked into that scene and there's a camera with you. You could be like on the edge of a cliff or in like a tiny room in the middle of a house and you're kind of feeling the same energy because you're sort of going through a scene. So as like a human being, like I much prefer like the beautiful locations of like Northern Ireland. But at the end of the day, when it's action, it's really the scene and who I'm with that depends on like how I feel about it.
Yeah. With Unsons, two quick things before we finish. There's so much music played on set, well, in the film, diegetically, in that room pretty much the entire time he's listening to music, which is great. And it feels like that was there. Like, it feels like the music was being played in those scenes. Is that, was that happening?
I don't think so.
No!
I don't think so. Yeah, I'm sorry. Wow. I'm sorry to, like, burst the bubble.
But that's great. That's an amazing, that's just incredible, you know, kind of sound design and editing and stuff to make us feel like we're walking into the room where the music's been played. That's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, Bill is like...
Loves music.
He loves music. And he kind of like radiates music. I feel like you could take a video of him and put music over it and it would just work, you know? Yeah. But he was always playing music, but... Yeah, I mean, I wasn't actually there for those scenes, but because I was in other parts of the house, like waiting, and I'd hear like really loud music
blasting. That's amazing. With you being such a fan of kind of soundtracks and things, do you have any that you return to, like favorites that you kind of go that are on your kind of repeat, that are kind of go-tos for you that you enjoy listening to?
What's that film? Oh, the one that I would say that I always come back to, and Ethric's Point Never, they scored Good Time, and they also scored Uncut Gems and Marty Supreme. He's probably
amazing
favorite. Like his name, he has this like name, and Ethric's Point Never makes like electronic music, but his name's Daniel LePatton, and he also
does
the scores, but it's the same guy. He's all time for me, but I listened to
this
soundtrack recently of this film Mishima, Philip Glass, who's amazing.
Oh, lovely. Amazing. It's amazing how many directors have picked up Philip Glass music, you know, existing music to use in their films and stuff, because it just does something. Same with Max's music, actually, Max Richter, and
Even
though the same piece of music might have been used in a number of films. Each experience of that is so different to the other.
Yeah. I remember when I was on set, I had like a 10-15 minute conversation with him just about life. And I was like in the middle of like doing a scene, but there was like a change of setup. And I turn around and I'm like, so what do you do? What are you working on? He's like, oh, I do the score. And I was like, oh, cool. Like, have you done a score before? And he was like, yeah, I've done like a few scores. I was like, oh, really? What's your last name? And he was like, Richter. You're Max Richter. He was like, I'm so sorry. I had no idea.
He's lovely, isn't he? Such a nice man.
He is. He's actually on like that whole press tour with us. You know, he came to a lot of stuff. Yeah. He's such a lovely guy.
Now, thank you so much for your time. It's so great to chat to you. Yeah, and I mean, like, I'm so excited to see all these kind of new projects. But as I say, there's so many beautiful performances and films for people to kind of, you know, dive back into as well. And I really hope people go and check out Honey Boy if they haven't already. But congratulations on Unsons. And yeah, I look forward to chatting to you again. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much. It's great to see you again.
Take care.
From the score to Hamnet, which Noah, of course, appeared in as Hamlet. That's Look at Me by a little known composer by the name of Max Richter. Rounding off this latest episode of Soundtracking.
This is Wilfred L. from Pod Meets World. HGTV is bringing back the 90s in a big way with Totally 90s House, a brand new renovation competition series that reunites some of your favorite television stars from the era for a showdown unlike anything you've seen before. Let's be honest, the 90s gave us some great things. The music, totally rad. The fashion, so fly. But the home design choices, well, that is a different story. Hosted by Jaleel White, this throwback competition sends two teams of your favorite 90s TV stars across America in search of homes frozen in time. Their mission? Find the two most dated houses they can and transform them into modern dream homes. Jodie Sweetin, Beverly Mitchell, and Brian Austin Green team up against Matthew and Joey Lawrence, Melissa Joan Hart, and Keisha Knight Pulliam. Paired with HGTV mentors, they'll transform those outdated spaces into fresh, modern homes while keeping just the right amount of dope, nostalgic charm. Goodbye, honey oak cabinets, sponge-painted walls, and glass blocks. Hello, 21st century dream homes. Totally 90s House. Special series premiere starts August 26th at 9, 8 central on HGTV.
This Monday.com ad was created by a team of people and AI agents. Reese, our content agent, wrote the copy based on our best practices, like mentioning Monday.com 3 times. That was the second. Johnny, our coordination agent, built the timeline and kept everyone aligned. Olivia, our human creative director, stayed in the loop because agents are great, but they don't always know when a joke lands. She had one note: tell listeners it only takes minutes to build an agent. So, minutes. Create your own AI agent today on Monday.com.
My huge thanks to Noah for taking the time to talk to us. And Sons is on general release in the UK now and well worth checking out. You can hear my chat with Max, that would be Richter of course, at edithbowman.com alongside every other single episode of the podcast. Follow us on your socials, we're at Soundtracking UK, whilst you can also subscribe to our YouTube channel, which is Soundtracking Extra. Now, I always get slightly kind of, I don't know, nervous when I talk about coming up next when I've not recorded it yet. But as I say, I'm about to fly back from Mexico City and head to Edinburgh for the Edinburgh TV Festival, at which point I'm going to grab some time remotely with none other than Michael Giacchino. If any of you have been to see Spider-Man Brand New Day, which is one of his most recent scores, you will be thoroughly impressed by what he's created, kind of emotionally, dramatically for that film. So I reached out to see if there was any chance of getting some time with Michael. So he's going to join me remotely at some point this week, at which point I will share it with you next Monday. Fingers crossed. Send me positive vibes. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.